This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. Finally, women have their own mediocre Marvel movie. That's a headline in the online magazine Slate about the new film Captain Marvel. So what's with that perspective? And we'll also take a look at feminism in the hit TV series Game of Thrones. Joining us now to discuss, our University of Cincinnati Associate Professors of English, Dr. Rebecca Sutherland-Bora. Welcome, Rebecca.
Hi.
And Dr. Mary Leach. Welcome, Mary.
Hi.
If you want to weigh in on this topic about the new Marvel movie or Game of Thrones, we'd love to hear from you as well. 513-419-7100. You can also email talk at wvxu.org. You can find us on Facebook or Twitter. We'll look for your comments and your tweets and try to get some in the show as well. So I'm usually pretty well prepared for these interviews when I have people come in and do research. I try to have some articles at hand, but I got to confess, I just don't know anything about comic book movies at all whatsoever. But you two do, and you're going to help me out first. We're talking about this Captain Marvel film. I think we've got a clip from the trailer, Josh.
I'm not going to fight your war. I'm going to end it.
All right, that's a little clip from the Captain Marvel movie. I will say I am fluent, however, in Game of Thrones. So if we want to do that park in Dothrak or Old Valyrian, I'm completely ready for that. But first, we'll talk about Captain Marvel. I referenced that headline from Slate that women finally have their own mediocre Marvel movie. Now, I'm not necessarily saying that you share that perspective, but the writer of the article calls it formulaic, but also a triumph. So what do you think she means by that?
Okay. Well, considering that it seems to be a very polarizing movie in the fandom before it's even out and has caused some consternation among certain privileged white males out there, and that's probably fair enough, but even a mediocre Marvel movie, frankly, is still a pretty good Marvel movie. And you can't get away from doing the origin story. If you try just to throw her in there and, oh, yeah, and by the way, she's the baddest, the strongest there is, just accept her and throw her in at the end of Age of Ultron or something, doesn't work. You have to build her up.
So then I guess the point of that particular article is that, you know, it's not a big deal that this movie's coming out and that, in her opinion, it's just a very average film?
Well, it can be an average film. And like I said, an average Marvel movie still is going to make millions and millions of dollars.
Sure.
This is the first one where we have a woman headlining other than the co-headline with Ant-Man and Wasp. We've been pushing to get this for a long time. We've wanted to see a woman show what she can do. And it's fallen on Ms. Marvel's shoulders. And that's what's, I think, really exciting about it is all of a sudden, a lot of little girls who, you know, had to fight to get Black Widow stuff. And now we've got another strong female character. And it's taken a long time to do. But now they're going to have this experience of seeing themselves on the screen, just like with Miles Morales in Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, getting to see Spider-Gwen in that one, another great character. So, yeah, call it mediocre if you want, but it's going to make plenty.
So what does that mean when you say we've been pushing for this for a long time? Who's we and how long? Okay.
Well, it's a lot of fans, not just female fans and definitely not just feminists either. If you look at the lineup for Avengers and find that they're kind of lacking in female power, guess what? There's still a whole lot of characters out there, and it's taken this long to get there, partly because of kind of machinations behind the scenes with Marvel, like Perlmutter, basically trashing things and saying that girls don't need to have merchandise and they don't need action figures and only boys need that. Up through kind of these out-and-out campaigns to trash the film on Rotten Tomatoes. They had to finally pull their anticipation rating because in 3 days it dropped from like 96% down into the 30s.
Yeah, what's behind that?
Well, it isn't just the Russians who know how to use social media.
Yeah.
it's also the guys that kind of started with Gamergate and other movements. I think you can look in the Star Wars fandom. You can also look at the DC versus Marvel fandom. There are a whole lot of fan communities that overlap, and being able to trash others has gotten easier and easier.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join this conversation about the new Captain Marvel film or the upcoming discussion on Game of Thrones. Email talk at wvxu.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter as well. So, Mary, just we referenced origin story. I need the origin story. What is Captain Marvel? Who is this character? Can you help us understand?
Well, she's an alien, if I remember correctly.
No, not quite. She is an Air Force pilot.
Okay.
That's right.
Rescued by aliens, the Kree, and pulled into the Kree-Skrull War. Mm-hmm. The Skrull are the shapeshifters. And if you saw Captain Marvel punch out that old woman on the bus in the first trailer, that was a Skrull. They're bad. It's okay to punch them.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. So we're dealing with an Air Force pilot. She's not an alien. She's a person.
Right.
With superpowers.
Yeah, she's basically, we won't know until the film is out and we can really get down to the nitty gritty, and I don't want to get into the weeds, but she's probably been enhanced since she's with the Kree. The Kree like to give other people Kree powers and then use them.
Who?
The Kree. This is one of the races that if you have seen Guardians of the Galaxy, we've run into them. If you've seen Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., we've run into them. Some of them are blue. Some of them look pretty normal, pretty much like humans. But they generally have more powers than like a normal human would have. And they've got this big war with the Skrull, you know, big problems in outer space, and they're going to bring them to our doorstep.
All right. But this is a character who has existed in comic book form for some time.
Yeah, for a good time. She's goes back to, when the X-Men came in. In fact, one of the first times you get to see her is in Rogue from the X-Men's Origins. That's where she gets some of her powers, is absorbing some of Carol's.
So this new movie comes out on Friday. So
yes.
We've not seen it yet, but critics in general seem to like it. A CNET review called it 2 hours of pure female empowerment packaged with all the visual power you'd expect from a Marvel movie. It's certified fresh at the online review aggregator Rotten Tomatoes, though you said it had to pull its anticipation review. But it was controversial for a process called review bombing, where negative comments are left before even viewing the film. Brie Larson, the actress who plays the titular character, said it was mostly white men who are angry about it. So what's motivating those reactions, do you think?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with, for some reason, these movies like Wonder Woman, and I know that's heretical to compare a DC movie to a Marvel one, but I'm going to do it. I'm going to be radical. But I think it has a lot to do with, for some reason, a particular fanboy group. And I think it's a fairly small group, actually, but they're very vocal, feel threatened by that for some reason. Like, for some reason, empowering women somehow disempowers, if that's a word, men.
Yeah.
And it feels very the same kind of thing happened with Black Panther to a lesser degree.
Right.
But this, the idea that this has sort of been a, you know, white male dominated universe for a really long time, and now there's other, you know, people coming into it that don't fit into that paradigm, for some reason it seems threatening.
So the New York Times published an article asking, can Captain Marvel fix Marvel's woman problem? Does Marvel have a woman problem?
It has had, yes, partly because of only having one female character basically on the team with Black Widow, and it's been an ongoing issue trying to get more female characters involved with it that aren't falling into the girlfriend role and subordinates and not the main characters. And it's not because they lack for strong female characters they could have brought in. But part of it is some of this old fanboy mentality that kind of carries over from the comic books is in the upper echelons of Marvel. And Kevin Feige had to fight to get Disney to take the MCU, Marvel Cinematic Universe, out from under the control of the creative committee headed by Ike Perlmutter. And they were the ones who would have to get things by them, and then they would get nitpicky and say, no, we don't like this, just to kind of cause trouble. Now that they've finally had control, you're starting to see Captain Marvel and Black Panther were the first two films that came through without having to go through that creative committee.
You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. We're joined today by University of Cincinnati Associate Professors of English, Dr. Rebecca Sutherland Barra and Dr. Mary Leach. So, Rebecca, you mentioned that it doesn't matter. This movie is going to make a ton of money. Now, is this particular one, is its box office success going to be driven by a female audience?
It's not going to hurt, but it takes, you know, a full spectrum. And there are enough men who are woke enough out there that it doesn't bother them. Now, are you going to have to see this to lead into the big one coming up here with Avengers Endgame? Well, right now, the rumors are there's a certain scene in mid-trailer here, or excuse me, post-credit scene that has directly to do with that. So they're kind of floating that out there, and people are like, maybe I will go see it now since it's got more to do with the Avengers. But she will be in that movie, and it will probably, I imagine, flow right into it. The Captain Marvel is set during the 90s, but what we'll do is the time jump back to the present.
Okay, for the Avengers.
Right.
Okay.
That is who Nick Fury called at the end of the last Avengers.
Yes, it is.
Yes.
Yes. Yes, and I have a feeling that maybe this post-credit scene might have something to do with that.
Maybe.
I'm happy for both of you, no matter what happens after the credits of this film. Rebecca, in your classes, I believe I read that you use fandom and superhero texts in a composition course to introduce service learning concepts and critical thinking about current social issues. How do you do that?
Well, one of the things I have to do often is explain what service learning is to the students, because it is an intermediate composition course, and some don't realize that what is this service learning thing? And to go through and talk to them about, well, there are certain ways of doing service. You can go through and just sort of say, hey, I got this. Let me help you with it. But unless you negotiate with people and use your skills, we do reading, writing, and research is our main thing that we help out different community groups and agencies with. But you have to find out what their needs are. You can't just kind of come down from the ivory tower and have that kind of attitude. You need to get in there, be part of the community. And one of the pieces I use is a fanfic that goes through and shows how you can go to a different place, a different culture, and still respect it.
So what have the results been?
They have been great. My students do quite a bit with the Literacy Network of Greater Cincinnati and work in Cincinnati Public Schools tutoring. But we also work, up at Church of Our Savior with their food program. Oftentimes I'll have students who have worked someplace before, and it's just a matter of getting them to agree to support the students, and we'll make them a community partner if it's something that fits the goals of the course.
Again, 513-419-7100. If you'd like to weigh in on this conversation, email talk at wvxu.org or find us on social media. Let's talk about Game of Thrones. Josh, I think we got some music for that too. That is the theme song to the hit series from HBO. Man, I love that song. I hum it all the time when I'm just driving or when I'm sitting in the office. It's the only thing I know how to whistle. It excites me. We were like 5 or 6 weeks until this show comes back.
Yeah.
So it's been a long wait. The show hasn't aired an episode in over a year.
Yeah.
Because it's the final season. They've only got 6 amazing episodes to come. They're each going to be apparently well over an hour.
Yeah.
And I'm very excited. Now, Mary, you're a fan of the TV series.
Yes.
And Rebecca, you've read the books.
Yes.
Okay. I've also read the books.
Oh, you've read the books.
It's been a little while, but okay. I have read the books.
Pete, the producer, has read the books, too. I have not read the books, and I feel like I can't now until the TV series has completed.
It's okay. They're not done yet.
Well, see, this was my introduction to fantasy. I've never had any interest in fantasy at all whatsoever, but I subscribe to HBO, so I give every show a chance. This one just had me from the word go, and it's really I can't watch other television series anymore because nothing is as good as this one. on. So we're not just going to talk about my fanboy feelings about Game of Thrones.
It's okay.
We do have a purpose today, and we want to talk a little about some of the feminist nature or anti-feminist nature of this show. So what we heard was the theme song to the show. It's a cultural phenomenon. It's set in the fantasy medieval world of Westeros. And this is where multiple contenders are vying for the Iron Throne. See, I was kind of laughing at you guys for nerding out a minute ago. Now listen to the words coming out of my mouth. It's ridiculous. I can't even deal with it. They're fighting for control of the Seven Kingdoms. And it's coming back for its seventh and final season on April 14th. So there are a lot of female characters in roles of power in this series, but there are also plenty of instances and examples of degradation of females, brutal violence against females. So, Mary, I think it was in my notes that it was you who referred to the show as the male fantasy of female power.
Yes, it's not the only—I mean, I've read that in several different
places. Okay, I gotcha.
Places.
Okay, so what does that mean?
It means that when— I always feel bad saying this because I love fanboys and I don't really want to denigrate them, but there's a certain group of, you know, usually white male fanboys that look at feminine power and kind of want to be a little bit more woke than they are. And so they kind of create these characters that they feel are powerful, but actually fit into a male fantasy of either beauty or the type of power that's sort of seductive. And a lot of times they end up having sort of like these male characters that push them forward, or they're sort of reliant on them. And you can pick almost any character in that show and kind of use that sort of setup with it. Even Daenerys, you know, has these men behind her that kind of keep her in power. And really the only thing that sort of kind of keeps her the most powerful one is her control over the dragons.
No, there's no doubt that the dragons have really changed the game for her.
Yeah.
Is that true in the books too, Rebecca? The TV series is slightly different than the books. In fact, the TV series is now farther along than the series of books. Mm-hmm. So your perspective on that, Rebecca?
Yes. There are, I think the books, without having seen the the books, I think the female characters come off a little more well-rounded. I'm not going to diss on Mr. Martin because I think he does a great job. He breaks a lot of these tropes that people get so used to in fantasy literature, stands them on their heads. It's like, you know, it's a big spoiler alert here. The person who looks like they're like the absolute hero, it ain't going to happen with him. And so if you look at who should come out on top according to the old standards, it's way different. We end up with people like Tyrion and Daenerys. And
So you're referencing what they call a dwarf in the series, so you're an orphan. Mm-hmm. And Cersei, who's really I think I'm Team Cersei at this point. And really, she's the villain of the show that's left, but she's a female. She's somehow managed, in spite of her own occasional incompetence, played this Game of Thrones better than anybody else, and really the most viciously. But she's been subjected to some bad things, too. But Mary, I think that's true for just about every major character on the show, regardless of their gender. A lot of these male characters have been brutalized in their own way, some sexually assaulted, some have had their genitals removed. So it's just a brutal existence there. So but do you think that there's a difference in the way the female characters are treated, either when they're attacked or when they elevate to a position of power?
I do, actually, because it seems like the go-to sort of trauma for a woman is rape. I mean, with Jaime, it's his hand getting cut off. And so it's sort of a symbol of his power. And the thing that's troublesome about rape, particularly in Game of Thrones, but it's not, by far not the only place, is that rape is seen as an empowering thing. Like, once the woman gets raped, she becomes stronger. And they're doing this with Sansa right now. But they also did it to a certain degree with Daenerys, because in the books, her wedding night with Drogo was actually more seductive. It was not sort of the brutal, almost well, it was kind of rapey. It was very rapey. And in the book, it was more seductive. He was much more gentle with her. But in the show, they chose to show it more forcefully.
And then she learned from one of her handmaids
exactly
how to seduce him. And that's when the entire relationship changed, because Khal Drogo, who is the leader of an army that she needs for her effort to conquest or to conquer Westeros, He became gentle and he loved her, and their relationship was really powerful and ended a little sooner for my taste. But, you know, she taught him how to be a gentle lover because his people were more barbaric and rapey, as you mentioned. They only knew how to engage in sex in that way, it seemed.
In the show, yes. In the
book, it's different.
Yeah, it's much different. And the reason she goes to her slave is because she wants to be, you know, she wants to kind of meet him halfway with this, you know, with being good at sex, I guess. Because she, in the book, she's only 13 years old. I mean, she's very young. They aged her a bit because watching him do that to a 13-year-old, I don't think most people would like.
No.
So there was an online article from a site called Villainess. It asked the question and then tried to answer whether Game of Thrones is feminist. And the conclusion appeared to be, in my reading of this article, was that, well, that's complicated.
Yeah.
So the writer criticizes the language and the way the B word or the C word are casually thrown around by men on the show. That's very true. Mm-hmm. But she also noted, as we were referencing, these very tough women. So just from a feminist standpoint, what's your assessment of the feminist nature of this series?
I think one incident that really is typical of how they try to be feminist but in some ways don't quite make it is when Jaime and Cersei are reunited. Now, in the book, it's a very tender reunion.
These are brother and sister, but they are also lovers, and they have three children together.
Yes. I know the incest thing is kind of creepy.
Yes.
Just a little bit. But in the show, a lot of fans saw it as being forced, that Jaime forced himself on Cersei. Now, in the book, it's very clear that it's consensual. And but when they were reunited on the show, it came across as rapey. And some of the fans said that that looked, you know, they were disappointed because of how it was in the book. And I know they got a little defensive about it. And so I think that's kind of a disconnect there, is where they're, the show is trying to show this as a tender reuniting, and the fans are perceiving it as being a little rapey.
And it, by the way, also happened next to the corpse of their dead child, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, yes.
So, I mean, there seems to be a lot of weird things that people could be upset about.
Yes.
So, I mean, their son was the king.
Mm-hmm.
He had been poisoned and died.
Yeah.
And
he was very evil, though.
He was the worst. Yes. I mean, like, there are some deaths on the show where you're like, yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for
that. There was
that.
A celebration afterwards.
Oh, my gosh. That one was just... And he was probably... His name is Joffrey. King Joffrey.
Yeah.
He was probably among the worst in treatment of women because what he did to the way he treated females, married them off or massacred them, mutilated them. He was easily the worst.
Yeah, he was pretty sick.
Well, the thing with the prostitutes and everything was for the show. That was not in the books. In the books, he's a kid. I mean, he's very, very young. And when he dies, it's actually a little sad because he's kind of calling for his mom. He's like something like 12. And the actor aged, so they had to, and they, I think they made him more evil because he was aging.
More time to develop.
Yes.
And did you get a chance to weigh in on that about, from the books? You know the books better than the series, but your thoughts on
I
whether
I think
it's...
because you have characters present who are women, it's very helpful. You have actually pretty decent diversity in the books because... you know, there are hints at different relationships. He may not spell everything out exactly, but oh my gosh, you don't have to be het in here either, which is nice.
You're saying straight,
right?
Yeah,
and there were definitely a number of women, so that you didn't have to have somebody just be the tough one. You could have somebody be more gentle, like Sansa. You could have Arya be the tomboy. You could, you know, have Daenerys, you know, the poor lost girl, you know? And that was okay. But you also had Caitlyn and Cersei, and
You had just about every type of female character that you could expect from any type, because there are so many characters. I mean, the listeners who have never seen the show are who have not turned us off by now.
I hope.
Already, I've heard us say so many different names. There's so many great characters, but there, I mean, it runs the gamut of motherly to powerful to seductive to treacherous to evil.
Insane.
Yeah. Absolutely. We got a call from Theo. He said that he's going tonight to see Apollo 11, and then he's going to see Captain Marvel. So plenty of men, he says, are looking forward to seeing that movie. So you may see some dudes when you're out there tomorrow.
I hope so.
All right. I want to thank Dr. Rebecca Sutherland-Bora and Dr. Mary Leach from the University of Cincinnati Department of English for indulging me with a little chat about Game of Thrones and enlightening me on some comic book movies I didn't know anything about. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Archives of our program are always found online at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks.